The scientists of today are creating the next big thing. On the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast, get an early listen to what tomorrow has in store. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, April 18th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Apple has come to dominate the U.S. smartphone market in a few ways. It's spent big on marketing schemes, and it's created an exclusive feel in its messaging by labeling texts from iPhone users in blue and Android users in green. But our tech columnist Christopher Mims says there's a lot more going on than just that. We'll discuss what it is after these headlines. Securities regulators are suing crypto exchange Bittrex and its former CEO. Bittrex was once ranked as the biggest U.S.-based platform for trading digital assets. Now, the SEC is accusing Bittrex of operating an illegal securities exchange, broker-dealer, and clearinghouse. The suit hinges on the agency's claim that Bittrex listed on its exchange digital assets that qualified as securities. That would have required the company to register with the SEC and follow U.S. securities laws. Attorneys for Bittrex didn't respond to requests for comment, and an attorney for the CEO declined to comment. Bittrex has said it plans to wind down its American operations by the end of the month, citing difficulties with U.S. regulators. Lawmakers in Europe are making the biggest push yet among Western countries to rein in increasingly powerful artificial intelligence technologies, like those behind ChatGPT. In an open letter, a dozen EU lawmakers said the breakneck pace of AI development in recent months now requires a new set of tailored rules. They want regulators to have new powers to govern the technology and plan to add provisions to the bloc's new AI Act, which is nearing the final stages of debate. The WSJ's European tech reporter Sam Schechner spoke with our sister podcast, What's News?
This group of lawmakers is tasked with hammering out their version of this sprawling law that's supposed to regulate some of the risky uses of AI. And what they're saying is, hold on a second. Let's not just regulate the uses. There's potential danger, at least, in the actual development of the underlying technologies, and that there should be some governance around that. And so they want to add to this law provisions that would govern the way what are called foundation models that help build tools like ChatGPT or like some of the image generation software we've seen like DALL-E in recent months are made, and what requirements those developers would have down the value chain for artificial intelligence.
Here in the U.S., the Montana state legislature has approved a first-of-its-kind bill to ban TikTok across the state. The move sets the stage for future court battles that could determine the fate of the app in the U.S. The vote Friday now sends the bill to Governor Greg Gianforte's desk. His office declined to say whether he would sign the bill, but noted he had previously banned TikTok on government-issued devices and urged the state's university system to do the same. If it gets approved, the ban would go into effect starting next year. A TikTok spokesperson said the company will continue to fight for TikTok users and creators in Montana. Lawmakers and officials across several states and at the federal level have proposed banning TikTok or forcing its sale to a U.S. company. They say the Chinese government could order TikTok's Beijing-based parent company ByteDance to use the app to spy on Americans or distribute propaganda. TikTok has denied those claims. And speaking of TikTok, as competition between virtual reality developers is heating up, ByteDance is offering to pay developers who've made VR software for Meta to bring their apps to TikTok's Pico headsets. Some developers have grown frustrated with Meta's vetting process for new software. That's left room for ByteDance to lure them over, offering some VR developers up to $25,000 per title. Our social media business reporter, Salvador Rodriguez, had a chance to speak with Chris Pruitt, Meta's Director of Content Ecosystem, on what this competition means for Meta.
He mentioned that more players coming into the space and funding developers was a good thing for the overall health of the VR industry. And there's certainly a truth to that, right? It's like in any market, when there's more demand for something, it just benefits everybody overall. However, you know, you kind of have to take that perspective with a grain of salt, because Meta enjoys there being more developers in VR so long as they continue to maintain their lead. So we'll see if that actually holds up, because if there's just more VR developers in general and they're all building for all the headsets, then yeah, that's great for Meta. But if more players come in and then the developers leave Meta for those other companies, those other headsets, that's not going to be something that they'll continue to keep enjoying.
Okay, after the break, you might think that making users replace their smartphones every few years would help device makers boost sales. But we'll explain why longevity might be a better key to success. We're back in a moment.
Buying a home is one of the biggest financial moves you might ever make. And finding a place right now comes with all sorts of challenges. Interest rates are trending higher, but buyer competition hasn't gotten much easier. So what do you need to know to buy a home in spring 2023? The Wall Street Journal's Your Money Briefing podcast is breaking it all down in a special weekly series, Under Contract, Your Guide to Home Buying. We've got personal finance and housing experts on getting the best rate, avoiding common mistakes, and a whole lot more. Just search for WSJ Your Money Briefing wherever you listen to podcasts.
Last June, Apple accomplished something pretty big. For the first time, it accounted for more than half of the smartphone market in the US, according to Counterpoint Research. As of December, iPhones represented 52.5% of smartphones being used here, and one Counterpoint analyst said he expects that figure to keep creeping up. So, how did Apple come to dominate the market? There are a few reasons, but one big one doesn't have anything to do with new iPhone models. With me to sort through this is WSJ tech columnist Christopher Mims. Hey Christopher, always great to have you with us.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Christopher, in your latest column, you wrote that Apple's dominance isn't just because it's viewed as cooler than some other brands. So what is it down to?
It's down to a lot of factors, and one, of course, is the dreaded green bubbles. And green bubbles are what outgoing text from an iPhone to an Android phone appear as. And when an Android phone is added to a group iMessage chat, it turns everybody's messages green and it makes videos tiny and unviewable. It's a lot of undesirable outcomes. So there's this network effect where there's a lot of peer pressure, especially among young people, for everyone to be on an iPhone. However, there's another big phenomenon going on, which is somewhat under the radar because it's less exciting, which is that the market for used and refurbished phones has absolutely exploded, and it's growing 14% per year. It represents, you know, 1 in 8 phones purchased in the US already. And a lot of those devices are Apple devices because iPhones last a lot longer. Part of this is build quality, but a big part of it is just that Apple supports old phones with new operating system updates for much longer than any other handset maker, up to 6 years currently.
Is there an area where we've seen this in action, where we just see old iPhones being used more and more?
Definitely used in the past, saw a lot of old iPhones being shipped to developing markets, but increasingly they're getting recirculated inside of wealthier countries, so they are being handed to young people. They're being handed to the budget conscious, the value conscious. In my own family, when it was time to give my newly christened teens devices, you know, I just went on back market and found last generation iPhone SEs, which were less than $200. Part of this also is that phones just aren't changing as much generation to generation. So when I gave them those devices, they did everything that they needed them to do, and for a fraction of the price of a new phone.
Do rival companies like, say, Samsung do something similar?
Samsung has gotten wise to Apple's playbook in terms of making its phones last longer, and just this past month announced that they are going to support their Android phones for 4 years after their release, which is still, of course, less than the 6 years that Apple supports their devices. And that's only with their newest phones. Samsung also is exceptional. Most Android phone makers do not support their phones for that long. So far, Apple has managed to grow its proportion of the premium phone market, which is anything above $600, fast enough to make it so that these older devices aren't impacting its sales. So it just keeps grabbing more and more of the expensive phone market. So Apple is winning at both ends of this spectrum, selling more premium devices than ever and capturing more of the low end through used devices than ever.
Does it help Apple at all to have sort of these low end reused devices on the market, apart from people being seen using them, apart from maybe it makes people think they're cooler? Does Apple as a company get anything from it?
Apple's done this amazing job of creating this totally new stream of revenue, which they can extract from any iPhone, whether it's used or new. And they call this their services revenue. So that's the percentage take that they get on every app that's sold through their app store. It's also things like Apple TV Plus, Apple Music, iCloud. This now represents about 20% of Apple's revenue and an even larger portion of Apple's profits, because services are software, so they're highly profitable.
Christopher, the thing is, at the end of the day, Apple is a smartphone maker. It does want to sell new versions of its phones. And we've seen across the market that premium models are doing better. So might it lean on the premium higher-end models to attract new customers if it has this robust resale market already?
I think absolutely. I mean, the funny thing is that these trade-in programs, I think, help people buy more expensive iPhones, right? Because they're not just paying full freight, even if they're going with a carrier, right? They're getting two, sometimes $300, $400 on these trade-ins. And every year, Apple's what's called average selling price just keeps going up because they just keep adding more, you know, honorifics to their phone. So first we had the Pro, now it's the 14 Pro Max. I wouldn't be surprised if there was like a 14 Pro Max and God knows what they'll add to it, Plus or something. And they'll just make some, there'll be an extra camera bump or some screen thing or whatever, because people have this incredible appetite for the highest end devices.
And we've been talking mostly about the US market. Is this the case globally for Apple?
It's been really interesting to see that Apple has made this playbook work in a lot of other countries. In South Korea, for example, the home of Samsung, a majority of consumers under age 29 actually have Apple devices, which I find incredible. You're seeing this play out in Japan, somewhat in Europe, maybe less so, but in all of these places where people have enough money, they're opting for the premium devices, they're buying the used devices, and Apple's share of the installed base just keeps creeping up.
All right, that's our tech columnist, Christopher Mims. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Zoe.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. For more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.